broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going upfront to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
All right, Monday. And usually Matt Smith, his smiling face, his good-looking face, all of our listeners who enjoy seeing his handsome face will be disappointed. Matt Smith joining us from the road. I know he's a happily married man, so hands off or whatever. Radio equivalent.
What a way to start a Monday morning. Just Steve.
Hey, you know what? I'll take any compliment I can get at this
point.
There
you go. Father of three, hardworking guy, political director at Channel
12. On the road.
Host of Upfront. All right, so you had an interesting guest on the Upfront program this week. He is the outgoing Speaker of the Assembly, Robin Voss.
Yeah,
and he was very honest.
He was. This story continues to continue, right? The tax relief deal that failed. Now he wants to revive it for another vote. That would take numerous things, but he came on ready to talk, just like some of the lawmakers who voted no came on ready to talk, just like the governor who came on ready to talk. This has been really fascinating to watch, guys, as I'm sure you've watched as well, play out over the last couple weeks. We're almost going to be, what, I think 3 weeks Wednesday since these votes were taken.
How many of them have reached out to you guys saying, hey, can we come on this weekend to talk about this?
Some of them, especially when they see other people talk on the show. Because they want to come on.
Watching Robin Voss's appearance this weekend, that's the vibe that I got of, like, he wanted to get on there and express himself beyond what he would be able to put on, like, a Twitter or something like that, of what he is hoping will happen next, and being not pulling any punches of saying, we would like to vote on this again. The assembly is ready. And it was that your experience? I mean, you've interviewed him a lot over the years.
Yeah, he was ready to go. And I think if you go back, one fascinating thing, they both brought out bills to demonstrate their points. Chris Kapica brought out dollar bills. And then Robin Voss came on and started bringing out $100 bills. So, like, there's a little
no surprise
shift going on. But to your point, Kristen, this was the first time we heard Speaker Voss say, let's do this again before the November elections. I've reached out to the governor's office. I think where this really falls, though, and we'll talk about this, is in the state Senate and Senate Democrats. They would need a couple of those to flip from no votes to yes, I think, for this to have any scenario or any chance at life in terms of a renewed vote and a successful vote.
Let's hear a little bit from Speaker Robin Voss on Channel 12's Upfront program.
Look, I still think we can get it done. I think that we should go back in. I've asked the governor's office to try to have us get another attempt to do it. Senate Democrats, hopefully, when they look at this poll and realize, look, we can't even get people in Wisconsin to agree what day of the week it is. And if 80% of the people say this deal should have been passed, let's give them some confidence that government can actually get things done to help real people in real time. And let's come back and do it in June. We can get it done.
Before November?
Yeah, let's do it now.
How realistic is that?
Well, the assembly will come back in. I can tell you right now, we are ready to go. I've talked to our leadership team. We want to get this deal done. I reached out to the governor's office. I have not heard back, I'll be honest, about making sure that we could come back in. But let's put some pressure on these politicians to get it done. Why would we wait until November when most people are suffering right now?
I took some notes off your larger interview, and this is what the speaker also said. I didn't vote for Tony Evers. I'm not his biggest fan. But in this one circumstance, he did a really good job. He sat down, he negotiated in good faith. We came to a compromise, there's that C word, where everyone got what they thought was in the best interest of the people that they were most worried about. We were focused on taxpayers, they were focused on schools, but we both agreed that the other's priorities were important. So look, he delivered. This is something that a lot of people have been talking about. Obviously, the MU Law School poll, other polling suggests the public wants this. The speaker said it's possible, but he points to those few Republicans in the state Senate. How big of a talking point, conversation piece, tension point were those three who voted against it?
Major. He's not happy with them. We asked him, Steve, to your point, who does he think is to blame for this failing? And instead of Senate Democrats, he immediately said the three Senate Republicans who voted against this. So there is some inner party friction, as we've seen play out on this over the last couple weeks. I don't think, from talking with them and hearing them talk previously, I don't think those three Senate Republicans are going to flip. If there was any chance of flipping and getting this through the state Senate, I think they would have to look to the Senate Democrats, and they were united on this when they went in. I don't know if anything has changed at this point. And listen, I mean, we're in a world where Robin Voss is complimenting Tony Evers, right?
Like, yeah,
right. This is crazy, the political dynamics that have formed with this tax relief deal.
Because of the three Republican senators, two are not running again, right? Rob Hutton, yes, and Steve Nass are the two, were two no's, and they are not running again. But Chris Capenga is up for a re-election this fall. And I'm guessing he still has a pretty safe district, but he does have a Democratic challenger. Is there any pressure that they think that they can put on him as far as making this go to a vote again, that he would change his vote? But I guess you still need the other two anyways that aren't running again.
Or Democrats.
Yeah, right.
Or Democrats.
Or some Democrats to join him, right? Yeah, I mean, and Voss came on real hard and threw some accusations that Chris Capenga was working strongly with the Democrats to bring this down. And that was at the really top and the front of the interview. And he came loaded and prepared to assert those. I've heard that from sources as well, just in terms of what this connection looked like behind the scenes. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out down the road. But to the polls point, Kristen, Charles was on the show, Charles Franklin, as well, saying, listen, whether this bill itself is a sticking point ahead of the November elections, we sure know that property tax relief, school funding, taxes are going to be top of mind for voters as they head to the polls.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Real quick. So he said he thinks there's a possibility. We know that certainly the public wants that. From your perspective as a journalist, having had these conversations with Charles Franklin and others, legislative leaders, how, I mean, give me a ballpark. What do you think? How likely is it that we might see something, maybe a new compromise or some version of this defeated bill come back?
I don't know how likely it is. I think we're going to need to hear from some Senate Democrats if anyone is willing to flip on this. And listen, I can't imagine that they would bring this to another vote unless they were 310%
yeah,
sure that it would pass this time around. I mean, every leader we talked to said they were confident before this was announced publicly that it was going to pass. And then
there was a deal done, Matt, right? There was a deal ready to go.
I mean, leadership said there was a deal. I mean, you then talk to some of the members in the Senate specifically, and they will say, no, not so fast. But, I mean, it did pass the Assembly. There were 10
yeah,
Democrats in the Assembly who voted for this. So, like, the big spotlight has been and will continue to be on the state Senate, at least on this issue.
All right, Matt Smith, political director, host of Upfront, Channel 12. We'll let you go. Busy work day. Anything you're looking forward to covering this week besides this?
Well, hey, listen, we have a 5 p.m. deadline today for signatures, so let's see who submits
yeah,
all their signatures.
Oh, yeah.
On the ballot, right? Yeah, that is today.
Who's already turned in? Do we know who's turned in already?
Yeah, so like Tiffany, Kelda Royce, Joel, Brendan, I believe. I haven't looked at the most updated list this morning, but they have until 5 p.m. today. And then we have the process, right, of the challenges. And there's the new state law that requires people gathering signatures have to live in the state and be able to vote in the state. So this could be an interesting process over the next week and a half to see who officially makes it on the ballot or not.
All right, Matt Smith, we'll let you go. Thanks for joining us, as always.
All right, have a good Monday, guys.
All right, for all of you out there, how likely is it, do you think, that this thing could come back? And should it come back? I guess is the more important question. 855-616-1620. You know what I think? I said bring it back. Find a new compromise. Figure it out. Figure out a way to get three more votes, if possible. Because I think this is one of those stories that taxpayers will remember come the primary and come certainly in the fall. Quick break on Point Taken on the Monday. Oh. It is Monday on Point Taken. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. If you miss any or all of our shows, always a great couple ways to find it, WTMT.com, or just Google Point Taken on your favorite podcast platform, or just subscribe to the newsletter, and we give you all the content that we do during the week. It's a nice synopsis.
Right there.
It's a snappy one, this one. I love the pictures. You had some fun with the pictures and everything, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Was that the one with the stripper on it?
Jaslyn made that one.
Oh, Jazz took some liberties. Was that me glaring at a stripper, leering? What was the MO of that graphic design?
It was a pole dancer, not a stripper. Oh. It's an art.
It's different. It's different. No, because I think it was, I had asked Jazz to make a fun thumbnail for the newsletter, and she went for it.
That's the one surprise, because when you generally do the wrap up of the newsletter, and I sort of punch a bunch of stuff in during the week. And then I'm always surprised by you polish, and then I'm always surprised by what you pick for like graphic design, or it's interesting.
Any chance to embarrass you, since you were we finished that conversation, you're like, I can't believe we just were talking about strippers right ahead of Tiffany.
Here we are again. And just the weird coincidences. Twice in the last week I've driven by a strip club in Franklin.
I think it's one of those things is once you mention it, you're gonna notice it all the time of how many billboards between adult stores and strip clubs. There's a lot of billboards for those.
Who's going to these strip clubs?
I mean, they're still in business, so somebody's going.
Someone has that need. All right, so Matt dropped that at the end, and I hadn't thought about that. We were chatting during the break. Signature day. And for Kirky Bankstead, he's not there yet.
Well, so this was interesting. I had someone text this in one of my many group threads over the weekend, be like, wow, is he really gonna get on the ballot? And so it's interesting because he communicates, like, it's through his Minocqua Brewing Company Facebook page is where he is usually largely putting out like his essays of Facebook posts. And on the 28th, so what would that have been, the Friday? Was 28th the Friday? No, that was Thursday. So 28th, he said that he had 2,000 signatures, but that the advice is obviously you want to go above and beyond when you get, you don't ever want to get just the minimum, because likely some of the ones are going to be challenged, and either they don't live in the state or they vote, because you can only sign one person's nomination papers. So if there's people who sign more than one person, so obviously you want to go above and beyond in case some signatures get disqualified. And so he was told that to get another 1,000, so they had 4 days to get another 1,000 signatures. And he was, at least according to his Facebook post, was getting charged $5.50 per signature.
So he's paying for someone to get the signature.
Which is normal, right?
Like, yeah, you're not paying
the person. Like, we were at the Locust Street Festival yesterday, and there was multiple people. I didn't have anyone ask me for a governor candidate, but for different positions, I had at least 3 different people for 3 different candidates trying to get on the ballot. And it was clear these people were getting paid to just go around and try to get signatures.
At a public event like that?
I don't know. Do you not like it?
I don't like it.
Where do you think people should be getting signatures?
Go door to door. That's the way I always did it. I went door to door so I meet the people that I'm asking for their
vote.
But
you didn't do... So for mayor of Oak Creek...
250.
That's very different.
Yeah, it is.
250 is...
It's a city versus a state.
But this is the thing that's crazy. I still can't get over, and I know I've mentioned this before, the fact that for a state ballot, a statewide ballot, where you can have any of the... between 5 million and 6 million people, because obviously some people are minors, to sign your papers to get on the ballot, versus the 2,500 signatures you needed to be mayor, to get on the ballot for mayor in Milwaukee.
Right.
Like, that was a very different bar as far as how much smaller the denominator is than the statewide population.
You think 2,500, I could go, if I said today, this is me bragging, just so you know what's coming, I could literally get 2,000 signatures in a couple weeks for whatever office.
We didn't even have a couple weeks. We had 2 weeks.
All right, 2 weeks.
In the middle of COVID and the middle of January.
I could just hang around the south side of Milwaukee and get 2,000 signatures.
I think we should try.
I'm not running for anything, although people keep asking. Why do people keep asking that question?
Anyways,
I'm not running for anything.
So you don't like, so which part do you not like? That people get paid to collect signatures or that they're at public events?
I want to see the candidate or their people on their team going out door to door and asking people what's on their mind. What do you think of this candidate who I'm representing? Or if it's me, what do you think of me? And we can have a conversation. All these pay for, play people. No, not a fan. Especially if they're out of state. Don't like it.
Well, that sounds like the new rule where you can't be out of state.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting that now they're going to be checking the people who are collecting signatures and what their qualifications are, which I didn't know that was a thing as well.
Yeah. And definitely have an ID badge of
but
some sort.
$5.50 per signature. So then the thing that it turned into is that he was asking people for money to be able to, you know, $5,500 to be able to get that many signatures in 4 days. And he was asking for people to donate to that, which, like, to me feels like it's also, like, feeding into the whole idea of him kind of being a grifter anyways. Yeah. Of, because I asked some of my friends who've run campaigns before, and they're like, I've typically heard $15 an hour. So you're paying someone for their time, like a normal hourly wage instead of per signature. So I don't know if that's...
It just gets into weird areas. Yeah, I don't like it. Anyway, so good luck to everybody trying to get those signatures in. Think there'll be any surprises?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, not only just for the governor's race, but all the other... Because obviously there's like 8 or 9 people running for Democrat, the Democratic seat in your district against Brian Stile.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see just across the board how many... of the ballots get slimmed down because people didn't get enough signatures by tonight.
Slimmed down.
Slimmed right. down.
Quick break on Point Taken. We're talking tattoos for some... Well, I'm getting a tattoo. My first tattoo.
I know.
I just reached out to the tattoo place in Maui, which is really like a high level.
The place.
Yeah. I'm worrying about the price tag, but we'll worry about that later because I'm already committed to doing
it. It's not that... I guess I don't know as far as if this place is that nice, how much more they would upcharge
it's
you.
It's the best place in Maui.
Still, if it's only a 3-inch...
Yeah.
Lots of detail. I think it'll be a couple hundred. That's my
it's
guess.
No way. It's going to be like...
But I also... The one tattoo I have, I also got... 20 years ago, and it was like $75. So I think it's
I'd take like, 75.
Yeah. The inflation's gone up a
Does
little
it
bit.
Surprise you?
Then.
I'm getting a tattoo.
No, okay. I mean it's not. Well, I've also known.
Yeah, you have
for a while.
I'm cool with it. I'm looking forward to it.
I think it's great.
I think it's great.
Very fun. Of
it
you.
Celebrates my life in a lot of unique ways.
Yeah.
Except I think my wife reminded me my name's not on it. I go. I don't think you want to put names on there, or do you? We've been together a long time. Anyway, we'll hash that out another time. All right. There's some shocking numbers about men in jobs. Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. It's
How's that?
June.
It is June.
That is wild.
The big three, June, July, August now. We're in it.
We're in summer. I'm 18 days away from my birthday.
Yeah, which I will be coming back
You'll be
for.
Here.
Yeah.
That's what I was... Should we do something fun on air for my birthday?
We should. Yeah, what are you... What, well, you, well, you
I
have
don't
to
know,
tell me what
I,
it is.
I didn't want to do... I feel like being like, oh, what advice do you have as I enter my fourth decade?
Or, yeah, that's
actually,
a big
technically
one.
It's your fifth decade.
Yeah, it's true.
But... I feel like that's not the best radio.
Well, you tell me, and I'll play along.
I want to do something fun or creative.
Do you want cake?
We'll be on...
Do you want cake?
If you want to get me a cake, sure. I'm talking about more of like a fun radio segment.
Yeah,
that
no,
we
we'll do that.
Today.
But I'm and to me, birthdays mean cake. And
sure.
I don't eat cake very often. I would actually look forward to.
All right,
cake.
Let's do a birthday cake.
So, what's
it's
your favorite
for me,
cake? Before we get to our real topic, what's your favorite cake?
Ooh,
I need to know this so I can.
Let's get an ice cream cake.
Okay, you made the hardest possible thing for me to get ice
no,
cream cake.
No, because you probably can't pick no. it up from Dairy Queen in the morning.
No.
I don't know. I'll get back to you.
All right, get back
Funfetti.
To you. Funfetti. Okay. I think I kind of know what that is. But is that the sprinkles on top?
You clearly were not in charge of your daughter's birthday parties if you don't know what Funfetti is.
I've said this before. My wife, Kathy, a saint, because she did all that stuff. I just showed up. And got all the credit. Hey Dad's
fun
here.
Dad.
Or
fun
now it's
dad.
Papa's here. It's like, oh, it's like easy. All right. Every morning, you and I get a lot of newsletters and things coming our way. And I still
we go through the headlines.
Yeah. And I still look at the Drudge Report. It's like an old habit from like 25 years ago.
Wow.
Which is sort of not as cool as it used to be. If that maybe that's not the right. Not as well done as it used to be. Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. But I saw this. Because all it is basically a quick blurb and then a link to a story. Sometimes half the time the links don't work anymore. It's like, what are you doing here? And they're making Matt Drudge is making a hell of a lot of money on this thing because he has ads all over the place. Anyway, I see this. This there's not often that I'm surprised by something, but I saw this one and it surprised me. One this is the title. 1 in 3 American men are not working, nearly 20-year low. And here's the stat that I could not believe. This is sort of the reality of this. Of the 369,000 jobs added to the U.S. economy since last year, 96% went to women, 4% to men.
That is wild.
It's a 50-50 population for the most part.
And it's when you sent it and I read it, largely it's because most of the, we know this, right? Most of the job growth has been in the healthcare.
Yeah.
And women have a lot of the healthcare jobs, they or make do. Up a lot of the healthcare jobs and education jobs. But 96% of the new jobs, like, I feel like, so this was from New York Post. So I feel like there's a lot of numbers thrown in this article that I want to go dive deeper in than kind of like the superficial level or the surface level. I think New York Post typically goes into things, because one of the things they were talking about as far as how many men are, because there's a difference between unemployment and the working population, right? Because unemployment only really incorporates people who are actively looking for jobs. It does not account for the people who are not looking for jobs, who are just accepting that they are not working anymore. I feel like, I don't know if I flagged this for us to talk about a couple weeks ago.
I think you might have.
Or if we ended up talking about it, but the difference between like Las Vegas unemployment like a small town that has no job prospects unemployment, and just because the unemployment's the same doesn't mean it's the same job market, right? Yeah. And so in these different pockets of the country where the structural deficit of job opportunities is crumbling because there is no actual labor, like there's no jobs to have, so that the unemployment is not always a telling number of how many people are actually working or how many jobs there are for these local economies. And so one of the things they touch on, at least for this article with the men, is how many are like living on disability, which I thought was really fascinating. So, and if that's a bigger number than for women,
it's increased. Now, it's still not the majority of people on disability. Men are of my age or 50 and higher. But this segment, the 20 to 35, is growing every year. And there's a couple testimonials in that story about, well, I'm living with mom, she makes it possible. I thought that was an interesting quote, because the guy says, I can't stand on my feet all day. I'm thinking to myself, old guy, get a desk job.
Well, this is what I mean as far as kind of the surface level reporting for the New York Post. And because there was a couple things in there that I felt like fed into the young men living at home with their moms playing video games all day.
Right, yeah.
Which, not to say that those people don't exist, but is it in such droves that it's driving this number? I'm skeptical. Maybe, but I'm a little skeptical as far as I just feel like we could dig a little bit deeper and figure out, like, what is actually happening? Because there was one testimony in there as far as, like, a 25-year-old who had stomach and, like, mental health conditions and lived at home. And like, I think the quote was trying to imagine finding a job seems impossible, which without a little bit more detail about this person's life sounds a little soft. But
again,
you know, because I do think like there are in this day and age, there's more options than just being on your feet all day. There are different opportunities to do like admin work. But I don't know. Is that something that's also getting completely displaced now with AI as far as remote hourly data entry work?
The reason I wanted to talk about this is because I think this is a time where we should be looking at these things. And you and I spent a lot of time listening to Scott Galloway. Big fan. His Notes on Being a Man, one of my 2026 books that I read. So I captured some of what he thinks the problem is, and we can do it after the break. But I want people to understand that this is a growing, growing problem. We have to figure this out. There's a mental health piece to this, absolutely. And not just on the one you suggested, where a young man is with his mom, and I think it was the case in the story, and trying to figure it out, right? I have issues, she helps me do that, or my parents help me do that. But there's another piece where if someone is not working, is not social, there's another piece that at some point could be violent behavior. And we've seen it play out in mass shootings, often lone wolves, loners, whatever term you want to use. So Scott Galloway sort of nails down at least four, and there's probably more than that, of some of the reasons why this is a dangerous trend. And I'll give this number before the break. Men are more likely to live with their parents into their 30s. 15% of men, 9% for women, have fewer close friends, and this is the one that also got me, face higher rates of suicide, about 3.5 times the rate for women. That shocked me because I thought women was higher.
I think attempts for women is higher, but I think success rate for men is higher.
Yeah, I don't know, but those are startling numbers. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Sort of the man problem here. Men are not seeking employment. They're living with their parents longer. There's a lot of reasons behind that. But what's the societal impact, one, for workforce, two, just for the general health of our society and our culture and our country. We'll get to that after this on Point Taken. Men in the workforce, 66% of men in the country were employed or actively seeking a job as of April. It's a 20-year low. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of
Labor. So it's basically since the recession.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm a big fan of Scott Galloway's podcast with Kara Swisher. He does a lot of things, author, speaker, public speaker, also a professor. He cites some of these reasons. Education gap. The gender gap in college has flipped. Women 2-to-1 earning degrees over men now. It used to be, what, 9 out of 10 were men? Mm-hmm. Which, again, it's a 50-50 population, so factor that in. Financial insecurity, he says, can erode a man's sense of value, making him less desirable. He's spoken a lot about the mix between men and women and how men are ever more challenged by, he says, women's expectations of how they sort, but it's also men's expectations because, again, 50-50. He notes that 3/4 of women say economic viability is a key in a partnership, which is actually a smart play. Do you want a basement dweller or do you want someone that has a functioning job? I'll take the functioning job if I'm looking for a partner. And this one, I'm not sure about. Maybe you're closer to this than I. You're younger. The closure of many bars and community spaces post-pandemic has reduced opportunities for men to find purpose and connection, pushing them further into screen-based, holding your phone or your laptop up to your face, isolation.
Purpose sounds weird there. I do think the social thing is absolutely part of it.
Yeah.
As far as...
Not just for men.
Everybody. Not just for men, but in general. That's in... Mike talks about this all the time, because obviously he's always done a lot of stuff with the service industry. And where Milwaukee is right now, and it's a weird inverse... maybe that's not the word that I want. But there's a trend of people drinking less, which I think, yes, we can say is a good thing, because I think we know that drinking, especially in large amounts, not a good thing. Alcohol is a poison no matter what, right? And in moderation would be great, but in general, it's not. Drinking a lot is not good for you. But also, socializing is really good for you, and it feels like we have forgotten how to socialize if we are drinking less. And the fact that in the downtown areas, so often, even on a Friday or Saturday night, there's not a lot of bars that are open like past 10 anymore. And it's largely because they can't, right? Because there's not enough people out there to warrant having staff and be open that late, which is very different than it was 10 years ago in Milwaukee. And there is something that has shifted as far as people wanting to be out and be out together. And that was what was, at least for us, and I know we're going to talk about neighborhoods and neighbors later on in the show, like yesterday at the Locust Street Festival, what felt great was just like this like cross-section of Milwaukee that was out celebrating, and the weather was great, and it was such a wide variety of people just coming together and enjoying music and vendors and drinking and friends and
point,
running into each other. And it felt very social. It felt really good. And I would argue that we need more of it, but it also is, you got to deal with parking. You got to deal with the inconveniences of getting together.
To that point, though, would a single male feel comfortable in that environment at what you just talked about?
Like showing up by themselves? Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe that's an opportunity. City of festivals. There's like so many things.
I mean, it has begun.
Yeah.
Yesterday was the beginning. This week, it's also Happy Pride.
Yes.
Pride's this coming weekend.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is we have a limited opportunity with the nice weather. I mean, I always say June, July, and August, and maybe that's a stretch. It's probably 5 months, but 3 really solid months of weather with a lot of things to do. And maybe that requires some engagement with some of these activities.
But I feel like there's also something as far as being of use that is shifted. I feel like most humans at our core, and this is why I never buy into, if there wasn't incentives, people wouldn't work. Like, I do think most of us want to be able to feel like we are contributing to something,
yeah,
and want to be of use, which this is a big argument. I think it's from the some working class policy institute saying the criticism of a universal basic income is that most working class people like take pride in the job that they have, and they don't want to just get something for nothing, and they want to they want to work and they want to be of use. And I think you lose a lot of your identity if you don't have something that is a job or a volunteering or some kind of ability where your presence matters.
Yeah. You want to be important in your life and you want to be important in your community. I love this one. And think about this during the break. It's from the 715. Thanks for the long distance listen. As a country naturally progresses and moves away from patriarchal standards, I think men are having a hard time with things not just being handed to them and having to compete, quotes, Texter quoted that, with women for education, careers, housing. I'm curious what you think about that. We'll answer that question, or Kristen will, after this break on Point Taken.
I have been throwing my good fastball. And he said, I recommend you get a job.
I know I asked you a big question before the break, but for eons, men controlled everything. That changed. Women, in many, I said it day one, women are smarter than men, and they assert themselves in ways that are appropriate, and the way that we've changed our culture and our country. Is that a challenge for men? Is that part of this problem? Is that contributing to the problem?
It's contributing to the problem.
Yeah.
I think
that's
as
the
women,
only reason.
As women are part of the conversation, whether it's competing for jobs or places in higher education or, you know, contributing to the household income, instead of rising to the occasion, I think that there is a displacement that has happened. And I think a lot of it comes back to the fact that for a long time, men, like women really couldn't exist outside of marriage.
That's all they
right?
had.
Like if they had to get married, even if they had jobs, like they weren't necessarily going to be able to be.
It was survival and, or not survival.
And so now the fact that there is not a financial dependence on men, women, we see this in all these other marriage rates going down, birth rates going down. So there's a lot of other externalities for that. But I think one of it is like needing to figure out how men can rise to the occasion and rise with women instead of women rising instead of men.
Couple quick text takes. I know we got to get the break here. I think this is from the 262. I think young men are lacking community and networking. Therefore, it is bleeding into their work life. Men feel lost and unappreciated. Another texter from the 414 says, do you think affordability over the last year since COVID it's been hard to go out
yes.
and socialize? That's certainly a part of it.
Well, wages aren't raising, rises. Wages aren't going up. Costs are going up, and we know that unemployment for young people right now is higher than it's been as far as recent grads graduating and not necessarily having the job opportunities they thought they were going to have.
Yeah, and the last text before we go to the top of the hour news, men now have to compete for jobs, education, careers with women. That's a big one. It's a 50-50 country. Men have to figure it out, but one of the reasons I want to do this segment is we have to acknowledge, like Scott Galloway and other people who've done a lot of research on this, have said to us in their books, in their podcasts, we have to acknowledge there's an issue here because it's leading to other issues in our country, in our culture. Good conversation. Thanks for all the texts. The news is next on 620 WTMJ.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson on Point Taken.
Hello, hello. Ryan Jacobson, hello. How are you this morning?
Oh, fantastic. Thanks. How are you?
We're doing great. You know, it's June. Summer is here. We're excited about it. And I caught wind of this while I was scrolling through Twitter, I think probably waking up on Saturday morning, just deciding whether or not I wanted to get out of bed yet. And I saw a lot of rhetoric around SpaceX. So we know SpaceX IPO is coming. And now it is getting fast-tracked to be a part of the index funds. And I was unaware of this, and I started reading some of the pros and cons of this decision. So I guess kind of explain to our audience a little bit about what is unique about what is happening with SpaceX IPO and how much quicker it's going to be added to the index funds.
Yeah, it's a really interesting situation. It seems as though as part of SpaceX agreeing to list their shares on the NASDAQ, they wanted to approach some of the index providers, especially the ones that track, like there's this ETF called QQQ. So it's the NASDAQ 100, the 100 largest stocks on there. And there's other ones as well. They wanted to be included in that. And so some of these index providers, they started racing to see who could lower their standards the furthest, still maintaining maintain the integrity of their listing standards, but include at least part of SpaceX in there. And it is really interesting. I think it's a healthy reminder, is that if you are investing in an index mutual fund, it's basically a form of active management, but it's based on like an index committee based upon their rules. And so there are certain selection criteria. You might not be owning the entire market. Now, there are investments out there. Vanguard has a number of them. There are others as well through Fidelity and Schwab, where it actually just invests in the entire market. So their rule is basically, hey, if it's a U.S. listed security, it gets included. And so this is a little unique that you actually do have these index these indices that have lowered their standards to allow SpaceX to be part of those investments.
Well, so to me, and I'm not an investor, right? Like I hire someone to help us, and I'm not as certainly not you. But to me, there's also something that I understand with the feedback of like you when you invest in an index, there is a safety to it, and because they typically have these kind of like higher barriers to entry as far as being a proven stock instead of a brand new IPO. And so, what is the benefit? Like who's winning right now by changing the standard in order to allow SpaceX to get in sooner?
Well, I guess you could look at it as three possible winners, right? One would be the index itself, because the way they make a lot of money is by licensing their index to exchange-traded funds, mutual funds, investment firms who use that data. And so if they wanted to be, you know, see the flow of money going into those types of vehicles, they get more licensing revenue. So the index providers themselves have a financial incentive to stay top of mind and be the most popular. Now, you also then have the company. So SpaceX, they want as many people as possible to participate in, you know, bidding for their shares as part of the price discovery process. So they're trying to raise about $75 billion. It's a small part of the overall amount of shares that are out there. I mean, we already know, I think Elon Musk is going to own about 40% of the company, 85% of the voting rights. And so what they're actually going to be listing on the exchanges is not the entire company. It's just a small part of it. And so this could be a good thing for the company as they try to raise money. And then the third parties that could be also benefit are people who want to invest in SpaceX that maybe aren't connected to the brokerage firms, the investment banks to participate in the initial public offering. They still want a piece of it. And so as a result, they can do that through these different indices. So I think you could argue that the biggest beneficiary of this is probably the index firms, because it's going to help pad their bottom lines when it comes to the licensing fees.
Brian Jacobson joining us, Chief Economic Strategist at Annex Wealth Management. Brian, I heard you and Dave on the Saturday program talking about the E-shaped economy. Dave talked about it last Monday when he was on, and the different ways that different groups look at the economy. And I'm just going to give you a couple of, you know, examples here. We have the markets, the three major stock indexes, record highs or close to that. Same time, oil prices surging, as obviously the U.S. Iran war, geopolitics, as Dave always says. And then inflation remains stubbornly high. How do you, as the chief economic strategist, sort of juggle all this, or at least make sense of these sort of disparate different viewpoints from different groups of our economic consumers?
Yeah, the way that I look at it is that when we're thinking about what is going to drive the prices of securities, because ultimately as investors, we invest in the companies, we invest in treasury securities, right, the different instruments, what drives their value? And then the prices. And when we think about stocks, most companies, not all of them, of course, if it's a diversified portfolio, some of them benefit and some of them pay a price when you have these higher costs of diesel and gasoline and shipping costs and the such. So there are winners and there are losers. That's why you probably want to diversify. But to what extent does this environment, softer consumer, right, the E-shaped economy where you have lower income individuals feeling more of the pressure, because according to a lot of data, it suggests about one third of their budget goes to food and fuel, right? And those are the things going up in price, whereas the higher income, so the upper part of the E, probably about 1% of their budget goes to food and fuel. So they're able to continue to spend. And then you have, you know, the rest of us in the middle, the hoi polloi, right? It's a moderate amount of our budget, but still feeling a little pressure, searching for more value for the price. does this matter to the bottom line of NVIDIA, to the bottom line of Apple, to the bottom line of you insert company name here, right? And so I think it's about focusing on what matters for that particular investment. And I think that right now we do have the high inflation driven by high fuel prices. But if we do suddenly see the Strait of Hormuz open up, the trickle of vessels continue to go through there, if those prices come down, a lot of the angst around inflation can fall, and maybe consumer sentiment can rise, and we can get like another kind of wind in the sails of the consumer here.
Lots more with Brian Jacobson. We'll do it after this. Don't forget, this Friday, June 5th at 9 a.m. Central, Dr. Brian Jacobson hosting a great Instant Insight webinar. That's the big jobs report. We'll talk about that with Brian after the break on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Go to our events page on annexwealth.com, by the way. Dr. Brian Jacobson joining us on the Monday edition from Annex Wealth Management. I mentioned it before the break. So bonds, the Treasury notes up to 4.44%, up from 3.95% before the war started. Mortgage rates climbed to the highest level in 9 months. Auto sales slumping. So that's sort of the negative side of the story when it comes to our economy. What are you making of those numbers, those trends?
Yeah, I mean, those aren't good, right? In terms of, you can't really sugarcoat it in terms of higher mortgage rates. It makes housing that much more expensive when you look at the monthly payment, and especially since housing prices are high already. And then when you're looking at the auto area, just as far as the cost of financing, those are very interest rate sensitive parts of the economy. The areas in which we're seeing actually more strength, it's kind of interesting in terms of where those pockets of opportunity and continued strength are. It's more in terms of where people are almost looking for cheap thrills, is the way some people have been referring to it. You know, instead of let's maybe cancel some subscriptions and streaming services and instead actually go out to eat. So forget about Uber Eats, go out to eat. People are also looking more at beauty care, personal care, fitness memberships. So more experiential, where they're seeing a little bit more value for the price and not trying to put it on autopilot. And I think that's the big change that we've seen in credit card transaction data, according to various providers like MasterCard, Visa, and American Express, is that people are actually beginning to cancel some of those recurring subscriptions and preferring to be a bit more intentional about their purchases.
Thank you, Rocket Money. the subscription to remind you to cancel your subscription.
Well done. Yeah, well done. Yeah.
I feel like sometimes I feel like between when you come on, Brian, or when Dave comes on, this has been, since this show started, the recurring theme of affordability and the K economy, or now the E economy. And as someone who's not an economist, I do wonder, it's like, how are we ever going to get out of this cycle of talking about affordability because it does seem like a lot of companies we hear, like, they're not going to bring their prices back down, even if they're in, like, keep the higher margins. And so is the only answer that, like, somehow we have to figure out for wages to catch up? Or, like, how do we actually get out of this cycle of where we feel like things are oppressively expensive for such a big part of the population?
Well, I think part of it is to remember that there's a certain selection bias that takes place with the news in general. It's never reported when things go well. Yeah. And when things go normally, it's always about, well, what's reported on? It's the things that don't go well. I mean, that's what gets a headline. And when we actually look at the data, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, they have this thing called a wage tracker. And so you can break down wage growth by different characteristics like educational attainment, age, gender, industry, all sorts of things. And really, for your typical American, wages have gone up faster than what prices have increased. So it's not as though things have become less affordable for your typical consumer objectively. It's more like, where has it become less affordable? That's the part that really stands out. The area where we're seeing the weakest wage growth is really in the part-time area. So based upon that same data, about from a year ago, wages are up for a full-time employee by about 3.8%. Okay, that is basically what inflation has been, right? So real wages haven't gone up, but they also haven't gone down. Where the most pain is, people who are working part-time. Their wages were only up 2.6%, and their lived experience with inflation is probably a lot worse than your typical American. So if they're experiencing 2.6% wage growth, but the cost of living for them has gone up 5%, right, that's where you're seeing the real pain. So I think that's where that K-shaped economy comes in, the E-shaped. But that is unfortunately the story of how things have been for a very long time. And in fact, what we typically hope is a person who is part-time eventually becomes full-time, right? A person who is 20 eventually becomes 30. So when you have these differences in terms of, okay, it's the people just coming out of college, well, get 5 years out, and suddenly that's maybe when they start seeing more of those wage gains.
But I think there's also a non-insignificant amount of the population that has multiple part-time jobs because they can't get a full-time job because there's certain corporations who don't want to provide a full-time job because then they don't have to provide benefits.
Yeah, it's roughly about 4 to 5% of the population in terms of working multiple jobs or that they're working part-time, but they'd be rather working full-time. So you're absolutely right. It is a non-trivial number, and that is up from probably about 3 or 4 years ago. But from like a historical perspective, going based on the data that we have, and for this, unfortunately, it only goes back to like 1990.
Yeah.
We're about back to normal. It's just it's been moving in the wrong direction.
Got it.
Hey, Brian, last question for you. Could Kevin Warsh and the Fed surprise us with a rate cut?
I doubt it. I mean, they could. I mean, that would really be a surprise.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because it's not called for, but could they surprise us given the fact that the president would that?
Yeah, I don't think they could justify it. And keeping in mind that there are 12 people around the table who vote on monetary policy. So when they meet June 16th and June 17th, which is the next meeting, the announcement comes out on the 17th. It's highly unlikely that they'll do anything from a policy move. I don't think they'll hike. I don't think they'll cut. The key thing is if we can actually see oil prices move lower between now and then, it does remove one of their rationales for a hike, right? The argument for hiking is, well, with high gasoline prices, people are expecting inflation. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And as a result, they need to kind of talk tough to get in front of that. Well, if we do see oil prices move lower, so I think the clock is really ticking for President Trump to get some sort of deal to get the straits open. Otherwise, the Fed is probably going to change their language. They're probably going to talk about possibly by December needing to hike as opposed to wanting to cut.
And as you say that, Iran has suspended those negotiations, so we'll see where that storyline goes. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist at Annex Wealth Management. Don't forget, Women in Wealth Series, Saving the Family Cottage, June 18th, 6 to 8 p.m., Annex Headquarters, which is amazing, by the way, in Brookfield. Reserve your spot at the events page at annexwealth.com. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
All right, we'll wrap up the third half hour of our four-hour.
Four half hour.
Yeah.
Four hour.
Yeah, that's it for us.
We have 4 30-minute segments.
We got a break. I'm confused, officially. Thanks for spending time with us. People are sending me pictures of funfetti cakes and frosting and for the big birthday celebration.
Know.
I didn't know, really. I kind of had an idea, but I didn't know what it was. So
we're getting here. Pictures of funfetti frosting, which is different. The funfetti cake
is
kind of like a yellowish vanilla
rainbow
cake that has sprinkles inside of it, but it's like it's a different flavor than a vanilla cake.
All right. So I texted after we were talking about that, my wife Kathy, she will make a cake.
Yes.
So you're already halfway there. We got to make the cake and got to bring it in without dropping it in. Would you share your cake with other
course.
People?
Yeah. I'm not going to eat an entire cake by myself.
What if I mush it in your face?
That'd be funny.
That would be funny. Great. What a great reel that would be.
There you go. Content. Are we going to go to the tchotchke store this week and make some content?
After my vacation. I've got a very regimented schedule because I'm only here till Thursday, and then I'm gone for 6 work days and 2 weekends and lots going on. All right, after the break, we're going to talk about neighbors and fences. You know,
is this like a badger fence thing?
Well, of course, badger fence, one of my great partners who I love, and I looked at my badger fence extensively over the weekend because I was outside, because you can tell I was outside all weekend, getting that good sun, getting ready for my big trip. You know, Caribbean.
Are we talking about Picket Fences, the show from the 90s that took place in Rome, Wisconsin?
We're not talking about anything like that. We're going to talk about, do fences make good neighbors? That's the cliche.
Do fences make good neighbors?
Yeah.
Like, or you're saying, like, do having a fence make your neighbors more tolerable? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yes.
Got
it. So I want your input, all of you out there in Radio Land, 855-616-1624. I have thoughts. You don't have a fence.
But I don't really have, my yard is very exposed.
All right. I thought it was a commercial. It's us. It's our time, our last few
minutes. Picket Fences.
Picket Fences.
Oh, this is the Picket Fences?
Yeah, sometimes you got to walk us.
Did you watch that show?
No. You got to walk us through this sometimes.
My parents watched this show.
Why?
I thought they liked it.
So going back to my... I love your parents. So
do you remember the show? Do you remember,
about it. Here's the thing. It takes you have to go back to like MASH to find any like network show that I watch at all.
Oh, really? You never got into like ER or Chicago Hope
one Chicago Hope?
No, NYPD Blue. I'm trying to think of like, shows of the 90s.
That's almost the same time as the end of MASH. I mean, that was actually 80s was the end of MASH.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that stuff anymore.
What did you watch before there was like Netflix and like all this streaming stuff? You just didn't watch TV and like the.
I'm not a TV guy.
90s and 2000s?
No, I'd rather read. All right, so.
I'm going to ask Kathy. I feel like you probably watched TV in the 90s. Just watch sports?
Yeah, a lot of sports.
Okay.
All right, so I had a lot of outside time this weekend. As you can tell, I'm very tan now and certainly got the base tan for my trip. Anyway.
Do you work shirtless
sometimes,
when you're up there so you don't have a farmer's
sign? I did because I got two mosquito bites, which I hate.
Make
I didn't
your
know
point.
They were on me. Anyway.
Make your point.
So I have a beautiful, thanks to Badger fans, beautiful cedar fence, 6 foot tall. So I don't have to see a lot of what happens around me. I love my neighbors. They're all great people, and I talk to them all the time. We all get along. There's like one that's not so great, but they know who they are.
The one that had the chickens?
No. Well, that's also a problem, but the chickens are gone. So everybody's
now you're friends with them again?
Yeah, it's back to kosher. But I was thinking about this. So the biggest reason we got a fence was security, two reasons, security and privacy, which is not everyone's reason. But it also allows you to not visually see. For example, before we had a fence, if we stepped into the backyard, every dog that was outside would like rush to their fences, their cyclone fences, and then bark at us like incessantly. So we couldn't enjoy that experience. Now when I walk outside, quiet. Except, this is one of the reasons I put this on here. Somebody either has a new dog in our neighborhood or a dog that's suddenly outside more, could be because the weather's nicer, that literally barks all day long. So for dog owners, what's the acceptable amount of barking? Like two barks, 10 seconds, two barks, like ad nauseum, hours and hours of this. Like, what's the accepted amount? Should we all have to, because I'm not a dog owner. I grew up with a dog, love my beagle, but I'm not a dog. What's the acceptable? This is one part of my massive essay on neighbors and fences.
I don't know.
Do you know the answer to that question?
No.
Does your dog bark?
We have a 16-year-old Chihuahua. He's the chillest dog. I don't know how we're ever going to replace Cliff because he's easiest.
Dogs are.
He is the easiest dog ever. Like he is just very chill. Never really barks in the house anymore. He is getting now pretty bold and taking Frankie's food, which she's getting very upset about. But for the most part, no. He doesn't really bark. I mean, I would say that's a training thing. So does it sound like it's a young dog?
I can't. It's not like an immediate neighbor, so I know it's a ways, a few houses, but it's like all day long. It's like, see what your dog is barking about and address it. And I got yelled at on email last time I raised a dog issue. I think you were gone. How dare you tell me how I train my dog? Is that what? You can't tell someone that the dog shouldn't just bark incessantly? I think that's a common thing. Anyway, the other one is we have a new neighbor apparently on the next street over. Who's either child or may hope it's not the owner, wakes up pretty early because I was out probably 6 a.m. on Saturday in my backyard because I get up early. They do this thing where they pull out of the driveway and they screech their tires in place and then they peel off. Why? There's no one up for the most part. Like, what's the point of that? So that's a noise thing as well. Okay. So when I think about this stuff, I ask this question because the cliche is, do fences make good neighbors? I think they do, one for the reasons I cited before. But a little separation is a good thing. Now, you would disagree because you're like in a neighborhood where everybody kind of walks around and
moves around. Like fence in the back, open in the front. Like a mullet. It's like the mullet.
It's like a neighborhood mullet.
It's like a neighborhood mullet. Because I feel like there's something weird for the people who like high fence their entire property line, where it's like, we don't want any contact with anyone except when we're out of our property. But I do think that there's something to be said as far as having a fence in your backyard, especially if you have a dog, so you can keep the dog in, especially if you have kids, kids stay in.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think having some privacy in your backyard. But the thing is, when you're talking about noise, there's only so much noise that's going to get mitigated by having a fence up. Like, neighbors are neighbors. Like, you're going to have to deal with other people's noise sometimes.
Other than the example I provided, so that every dog in doesn't rush up to the fence.
So I feel like the privacy stuff is more about visual than the noise. Like, what we're talking about, the roosters. Like, the fence didn't really block out the rooster noise.
I would argue that because those two neighbors had a cyclone fence, the one neighbor who didn't want the roosters, besides hearing it, was able to visually... was able to visually see they had a...
But you're complaining about noise.
Yeah, primarily noise, but also I don't like to look at other people's junk. And I know enough about landscaping and yards because I built decks in the past and I did a lot of stuff. People love to landscape. People are lousy at maintaining their landscaping. You know what I'm talking about? It's like they put the stuff in, they go to Menards, Home Depot, Lowe's, they buy the stuff, they buy the mulch, they plant the flowers, and then like 3 years later, it's like a weed field. Like, why did you do all that work and not maintain it? So that's one thing. Now, the texters on the dog issue agreeing with me. There's actually, I would love to know where this is. Our city ordinance allows for 10 minutes for your dog to be making noise before you can be fined.
Oh, wow.
That's extreme. I prefer a private backyard and a well-groomed open front yard. Yeah. Well, that's what I have.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have a fence in your front yard.
Are you arguing, like, is it unneighborly to have a fence?
No.
What is your question?
I'll get to my question in a second. I am arguing that it is more neighborly to separate a little bit. Because you're sharing that space, especially in the summer. Winter, who goes back? I don't even go in my backyard that much in the winter. But in the summer, when you want to be outside, a little separation is a nice thing. A little separation.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. So my question is this, for all of you out there in Radioland. Have you put up a fence to reduce the sight lines, noise, not so much unless the dog's charging you, of your neighbor? I'm just curious. Have you actually spent the money to put up a fence to sort of reduce your visual cues to what your neighbors are doing? We did. That was part of our security, privacy, and just making our yard look better. And here's the cool thing. More birds, because they're not charged at by dogs all the time. More wildlife. It's just better.
But here's my question. Has it changed over time?
What has what changed?
So, like, how long have you been in your house?
Since 93.
And what year did you put the fence in?
10 years ago.
So how many more fences are there year over year since 1993?
Wood fences in my little block? Probably three. Cyclone fences? A lot more.
What is a cyclone fence? I don't know.
It's the one you can see through. It's just steel.
Oh, chain link. Okay.
Chain link.
Yeah, fence. Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay.
Cyclone's a brand, I think.
Because I think, is that the bigger point that you're making? Like, is that 30 plus years ago, people had less fences, and now people have more fences, and that's a good thing?
When I moved in, nobody had a fence.
Really?
Yes.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of our neighborhood. Because the neighborhood we grew up in, we'll go to break. I'll talk about the neighborhood I grew up in.
Keep those texts coming. Just curious if you actually put up a fence because of neighbors. I love that piece of this because it tells me something about what you think, how you enjoy your backyard, and probably more importantly, how your neighbors are conducting their lives in their backyard. We'll discuss. 855-616-1620. Point taken. To fence or not to fence? That is the question. Talking about neighbors getting along. I love some of these texts. Our neighbor used to wander into our backyard whenever she felt like it. 1 year of that, and we put a fence up.
Fair.
We're stopping you from coming to the yard. Here's from the 414. I have a fence, but it's only 4 feet to keep my dog in the yard, but I planted 20 arborvitaes for privacy. I was just telling Jazz, who came into the studio during the break, I don't just have a 6-foot fence. I've deliberately planned my landscaping to shield well above that. I have trees planted now. I have bushes that eventually I'll have like a 12-foot wall around my backyard.
And it was funny because I'm thinking about how I grew up. So I grew up in a neighborhood called Nakoma in Madison. And we did have a fence, but it wasn't like a locked... To get in and out of the fence, there wasn't a lock. Like, you could just open it. But we, like, the magical childhood that I was lucky enough to have, grew up on a cul-de-sac. And almost every single house, not only on the cul-de-sac, but even on, like, the street on the cul-de-sac, or leading to the cul-de-sac, had kids in it. And throughout the summer, we would play games in the cul-de-sac. Oh, yeah. A lot of times it was like kick the can, right? Mm-hmm. And kick the can requires you to go hide. And just the freedom that we had to run through everyone's backyard. Because we were the only, our house was the only house that had a gate and fence in it, but you could, we still ran through our backyard. We just opened the gate. But thinking back at it now, of just the fact that all the parents were just okay in the summertime of having children just racing through your backyard as they were playing games. And it'd be interesting to go back. I haven't been back in a while to see how many more fences there are now on the property lines in the neighborhood I grew up in.
Yeah, a lot of people saying that the reason they have fences is because of the dogs, which I appreciate.
And I think that's why we had ours. We also had a basketball court in our backyard, so it helped to keep the ball in our yard.
One of the other things a lot of people talking to, and someone just sent me a beautiful picture of turkeys in their backyard. I'm a wildlife guy. I still get wildlife. Stuff drops in.
Did I tell you that we had a turkey in River West the other week?
Really?
It was so random.
Walking down the street?
Just walking down the street.
Careful. You know what happened in Tulsa? They got millions of turkeys now, figuratively speaking. They'll come at you.
Oh, I didn't. I was up in my balcony, like in my house, but I decided I got a video of it. But I was like, this is the most random. Turkey in River West. Very odd sighting.
It's like I see deer walking down my street, and I live in a pretty developed neighborhood. It's like, where do these deer come from? But there's like a forest close to us. Let's see. We have bought homes. This is from the 317. I don't know, you know where that is. We have bought homes, probably Illinois, with backyard fences and or installed fences, but purely for the purpose of allowing our dogs to run free, having to walk them with leashes all the time. Well, that's good ownership. That's being a smart pet owner. My husband and I, this is from the 608, decided on natural fencing for privacy in our backyard. I have cedar, by the way, someone asked. Hydrangeas, dream catcher, all different leaf colors, flower color. Looks great, functional, and all of our bird friends. That's the biggest thing I've noticed since we put that fence up. We had the bird thing on our phones. She had like 15 different species of birds in our backyard.
Do you have binoculars?
No.
Oh.
We don't have that big of a yard. I can see the bird. My eyesight's not that bad yet. No, but that makes for when you're sitting out there in our beautiful gazebo and patio, we can watch the birds, hummingbirds. You never used to have hummingbirds. Now I have two hummingbird feeders. I'm that guy, but I want to be left alone to some extent. I want that privacy, and that's why.
I don't think anyone's surprised by that.
You mean listeners?
Yes. I don't think any listener is like, oh, man, I'm really surprised Steve wants privacy in his backyard.
Well, that's not an unreasonable request.
No, it's not. But it's just funny because I'm trying to think of, like, for someone who has a lot of opinions on how other people live, it doesn't surprise me that you want to block it.
Honestly, God, when I said something about, I said, train your damn dogs, I got all these emails saying, how dare you tell me how to train? Is that like an unreasonable request? Train your dogs. Barking all day is not a normal thing for dogs. They're telling you they're stressed about something. Yeah. Figure out what that is. Give them a milk bone or whatever. What's the equivalent of that now?
They still have milk bones.
Do they really? God, I gave my dog milk bones 40 years ago.
I think there's a picture of me at like 2 years old eating a milk bone.
Why?
Because a toddler, you stick anything in your mouth.
Oh, as a baby, you mean?
Yeah, as like a toddler.
I taste it when
I have some pictures of Frankie eating some dog food.
Oh, that's
funny.
Let's see. I have a fence. Oh, I already read that one. No, you just have to annoy your. This is a good one. You just have to annoy your neighbors enough so they put up their own fence. That way, you don't have to pay for
it.
Because some fences aren't cheap. All right, we'll
work take a smarter, break. Not harder.
There you go, Chris and Steve. Point taken. Monday edition. Where did time go? This show's up already. Our 2 hours is
already done.
Intense radio deliberation.
Three more shows until you are
vacation countdown.
Caribbean bound.
Great show tomorrow. My colleagues over at
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Tamia Folks and Caitlin Luby are going to join us to talk about the investigative reporting they've done for the last 2 years on PCB cleanup. So it's some of the largest PCB cleanup that's happened in the last 40 years has been in the Great Lakes. And specifically, they followed one man, Scott Mesenheimer, who from being part of the cleanup crew, developed cancer, and talking a lot about what happens to a lot of the people who've been in charge of the cleanup, who's at the most risk for these PCBs. They've done such great work. So they're going to be in studio tomorrow to talk about the reporting, talk about this story, and also what you need to know about this mess that we're still cleaning up.
Yeah, real journalism, why it matters, great reporting, and we'll get to that tomorrow. Great show.
Great
See
show.
You tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
News is next.